Accession number 18207, Reel 2.
Tom O'Reilly, Reel 2. I just asked you about any other things that happened to you in South Africa that you remember.
Plenty of things happened, but I wouldn't say any of them are of any particular interest at all.
So how competent a flyer were you by the time you left South Africa?
Oh, well, from Pretoria, this was only on the EFTS, the Tiger Moths. Training then continued. At the end of your course on Tiger Moths, they decided, according to meanwhile, our original course of about 100 had kind of dropped right down to about 80, 75, 80, with boys falling off the course and failing it and so on. And as you progress through your EFTS training, various characters dropped off. Some air sickness and all that kind of stuff, you know, failing exams and what have you, considered unsuitable and the like. And our course then, I would say around about 60 of us remain. At the end of it, then you were sorted out according to your temperament as to whether you were more fitting to be in fighter command or bomber command. And I think of the 60, maybe about 20 were proposed as fighter command and the rest bomber command, and our training then disappeared. That's where Roy and I parted company. We've been together all this time, and Roy unfortunately wasn't lucky enough to be selected as fighter, and he went on to bombers, which was further training at I think it was a place called Vereeniging. I then went to Standerton outside of South Johannesburg onto Mars Masters. Standerton, yeah.
Standerton?
Yeah, outside to Johannesburg. And our training continued from there. We went on to the more high-powered semi-operational aircraft then, you know. Again, that course was split into two, an ITS, initial training school, and an advanced training school. At the end of your advanced training school, that's when you had your wings parade. You had your exams and everything else, your flying tests and your all your ground tests, and the results came out as whether you'd passed or not. You got your wings or you didn't. And I remember our wings parade, Yoni Smuts and Omar Smuts presented our wings. And when we actually got training in EFTS at Vonderboom and at Standerton, we were a mixed course with South African pupil pilots as well as RAF. So the courses were mixed, South African and RAF. That's where I met at Standerton in Johannesburg. I met a young lady called Gwen Rose, and she was very fittingly named as a Rose. She was a beautiful girl, and I got very involved with Gwen. Not seriously so, but being overseas, of course, we had no one that we could invite to our wings parade, so I invited the Rose family. But weekends, we used to go out into Johannesburg from Standerton for weekends, and we'd be guests of various people who had volunteered to take RAF Wallers for the weekend. And I spent most of my weekends with the Rose family. And they presented me with a Rolex Oyster wristlet watch as a passing out present. Pride of my possession till I got to Cyprus.
What happened then? You lost it?
Yeah. Got plastic. Pie-eyed and woke up without it. Don't know where it was. But place called Pathos in Cyprus. They sold a very palatable called Commanderia, local wine. I think we used to pay about 1 and 9 pence for a quart bottle of it, something like that. And one of those things tasted like a rather more solid sarsaparilla. But after you'd had one bottle down, you started on your second, the effect of the first started. And by the time you were starting on your third, you'd be on the point of no return. You just kept going then.
So coming back to South Africa, after you'd got your wings, what happened to you then?
Went straight up to the Middle East, Desert Air Force, place called Ismailia. No, Castries at first, which was like a training, a holding station. And again, some of the lads' feathers disappeared then, you see. Some went, they went prepared to wait to be posted to a squadron, and they went on to ADUs, aircraft delivery units, and things like that. And we done an OTU at Ismailia from Castries on Hurricanes. We were converted onto Hurricanes. And then I, myself, with Dagwood Bolton and Wally Hope, we were posted to 274 Squadron at Derna, which are Hurricane 2Cs.
What was it like flying the Hurricane in those days?
Well, initially, quite dicey, because it was the first time we'd used overload tanks. And also, in the Middle East, in the desert, you had an awful lot of turbulence. And quite close to the ground, you could be coming to land and and just hit a pocket and drop about 12, 15 feet, you know. And vice versa, you could find an updraft and take you up 10 and 15 feet. So it became quite tricky, in fact, until you got used to it, and then you all took it in your stride. That was the Hurricane 2Cs. We eventually got the Hurricane 2Ds, tank busters, you know, with 40mm cannons. They were big boys then, you know. You've probably heard of the tank busters, have you? Tank busters.
I'm more familiar with the Typhoon as a tank buster.
Oh, I finished up on, I flew them as well. But the Hurricane 2D, we had two 40mm cannons. And the basic role with them was pillboxes and tanks and the like, you know. Of course, you fire those and you know you're firing something, you know. Especially if you've got a stoppage, very dicey.
What happened if you did get a stoppage?
Oh, well, the aircraft had suddenly slew. One wing would accelerate, you know, four times faster than the other. And you'd finish slewing like the clappers, yawing like nobody's business, you know. And especially as most of your attacks were made at low level, it had to be quite ready for it. And if it happened, it had to be fairly quick, you know, kicking an opposite rudder and straightening your aircraft up, you know.
Now, you said that you joined the squadron 274. Where did you join it, did you say?
Derna. Derna.
D-E-R-N-A.
N-A, Derna.
Where's Derna?
Yeah, that's in Egypt.
And
west of Tobruk.
From your logbook, it looks as though we're talking in terms of September 1943.
Is it 43?
According to your logbook.
Yeah.
What kind of operations were they doing when you joined them?
Mostly convoy patrols and any support then to ground attacks.
What kind of convoys were these?
In the Mediterranean, you know, naval convoys and the like, you know. And when we finished up at, what was the name of the place? Castel Bonito, I think it was. Or was it? No. I can't remember now. But we'd done a couple of convoy patrols for convoys heading to Malta.
Did the convoys need much protection from the enemy?
Well, they had been getting clobbered from Sicily and Italy with the Luftwaffe on, I think they were Dorniers. Dornier 217s and Junkers 88s.
Did you have any contacts with the enemy doing that kind of work?
Not at all, none. Saw nothing of them. thought we did it one. My first trip. The funny thing about there's one thing I can always recall that I think I must have aged about kind of 10 years and about 5 minutes, I think, and that was when I'd done my first patrol. When we first joined the squadron, we had, I'm trying to think of the sailor's name, I can't for the life, oh, Gallant Graves, we used to call him. Squadron Leader Graves. Gallant Graves. And there was three of us joined, and I'll always remember when we first joined, he said, have you lads ever flown the Hurricane? Said, yeah, we just finished OCU on them. He said, have you used tanks? And we said, no. He said, oh, no bother at all. He said, come on, I'll show you. So it's a case of jumping in the cockpit, and very hurriedly, as far as I can recall, I think he said, you take off on your mains, and then once airborne, after 5 minutes or so, you select port or starboard overload tank, which is a control down on the right-hand side. He said, leave it for a second or so, and then turn your mains off. And then run for 45 minutes, or approximately 45 minutes on that. Turn back onto mains and then switch over to neutral and back to port and then off again. So it's quite a complicated system going from one tank to the other and then back onto your mains and on your reserve and so on. He said, it's quite easy. He said, you lads done any ops? No, not yet. So what, you're bound to get to it. So you can go on readiness tomorrow. And he said, I asked usual Paddy. He said, Paddy, he said, you can go on readiness tomorrow. He said, you won't have anything to do. We're always very quiet. You'll never do anything. And we were only there about... The next morning, I think we're on early readiness, immediate readiness. I think it must have been 6 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Never too bright at that time, anyway. But we went on to readiness, and we were scrambled for. I remember thinking, "Oh God, this is the end of the world for me," kind of thing. I expected to be just sitting, sunning myself for about an hour and a half. And next minute, we were flying to these. And when I got there, I thought, now, what was it he said? And I tried for the life of me to remember, you know, what he said to do first and all the rest of it. But just, I don't know if it was pure luck or whether a good memory or what when I was younger, but I managed to get airborne. And I'll always remember holding my breath when it came to switching that main off. It's the first time I'd ever switched off a main. And I had no confidence in it, something that was completely new, i.e. these overload tanks. And switching that main off. When I switched it off, I more or less closed my eyes and waited for the engine to stop, but it didn't. Kept going. So that was my initiation into overload tanks. Navy were always known as being trigger happy, and you had to approach the convoy at a certain direction, which was predetermined. And also, you had colours of the day, which your number one knew. And you'd have to fire the colours of the day approaching the convoy, otherwise they'd open up. Whether they'd recognise you or not, they'd still open up on you. And we'd fired the colours of the day on my first convoy patrol, and I was following my number one. I can't quite remember who he was then. But we must have been up to about 5,000, 6,000 feet, something like that. And all of a sudden he came over on me. What do you call them? Oh, bogies. Bogies, 9 o'clock below. Right? And we looked down, there's three aircraft flying, looked very much like 217s, something like that. And he said, through the gate, which is, you know, you're on your throttles, on your spits and your hurricanes and all that, you have a wire across the maximum part of your gate, which discourages you from accidentally going beyond that point, because it would only run for a second. You're likely to blow your engine up if you stayed there too long. But in an emergency, you could go right through the wire, as they call it, you see. And he called through the wire, bogeys 9 o'clock below, looked down, and there's these three things. Well, bearing in mind, this was something that wasn't supposed to happen to me at all, because I was supposed to be having a nice early morning, doing nothing kind of thing, and this all happened within a space of, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. One, the anxiety of the overload tanks, which I never had any faith in, and the second thing, they thought of me having to actually take action against an enemy. And he said, well, you take port, I'll take starboard. We peeled off, gun switches on, came back, and then he said, oh, break. And I forget what they were Blenheims, I think, but they were coming back from Sicily. They'd done a bombing run there, and they were probably so relieved to kind of be on the way home that they never realised they were heading straight for the convoy. And if we had to kind of whip down and more or less buzz them, then they wouldn't have realised. The Navy probably would have opened up on them. But as I say, in those space of those few minutes, I think it must have aged about 10 years. must have gone up about 19 and come back as down as 39. But all happily behind me now.
You put in your logbook offensive sweeps on Rhodes and Castel Rosso. What did they involve?
Oh, that was... well, we moved then from Derna up to initially St. Jean in Palestine, I think. And then from St. Jean in Palestine across to Paphos. And while we were at Paphos, that's when we done these offensive sweeps, you know. We used to go out with overload tanks and we'd whip around Rhodes and Castel Rosso and the like, you know, looking for enemy aircraft, you know.
Did you come across any?
Fortunately, never finding any. Another problem was then, and I'm just trying to think back, there was some problem occurred then with, and I always remember the bloke's name, like Air Commodore Saul, I'm not quite, I don't remember the name, and there was something to do with, overload tanks, what was it now? I'm not sure, but if we went to Leros or Castel Rosso, we were okay. But if we had to go to Rhodes, we would have had to drop our overload. And we had we'd have 90-gallon overload tanks then. We'd have to drop them. And it would mean then, in order to enter combat, it mean then that we wouldn't be, we'd be very dicey whether we'd be able to have enough fuel to get back. There was something, I'm not quite sure what it was now, I can't remember. But there was some bit of a dice, and I think one of these operational types from ops headquarters, I think they dropped a clanger. I suppose it wouldn't do really for me to not being absolutely sure of my facts to say anything, but I think it was somebody, one of the higher-ups, I think they dropped a clang and was at a court-martial over this. And I think it was something to do with detailing sweeps over roads from Cyprus when you wouldn't be able to make it back. And I think a couple lobbed down quite on the beaches by Turkey on the way back because they couldn't make it back. And there's some controversy, but what it was exactly, I can't quite recall now.
Later in 1943, in October, you put in your logbook AFU Setif. What was the AFU?
Advanced Flying Unit. Well, what happened then, I converted then, I was on Hurricanes, you see, and then I went to Setif. Before that, I went to an aircrew rest camp in a place called Hammam Leaf, and Hammam Plaz, which is just south of Tangier. And this was more or less a rest camp. It was beautiful, you know. We had, we were all billeted in houses, and actually it was the colonial French property, I presume. And our mess, in fact, was right on the front, and it's absolutely beautiful, a gorgeous mansion type of thing on the front. And we had our own stretch of briefs. We had Italian prisoners of war, actually, patrolling the beach either end and our area of our rest camp, you know, allowing nobody in. And even the Bear of Tunis, I believe, had been turned back at one time, riding along the sand there by the high-type POWs, because we had our own stretch of beach, you know. Talk about VIPs, it was beautiful, aircrew rest camp. And from there then, I volunteered for Spitz, and I was sent to AFU, which is Advanced Training, and I converted from Hurricanes to Spitfires.
How did you like the Spitfire after the Hurricane?
Much lighter to fly. Much lighter to fly. I suppose one could call us a sweeter aircraft. On the controls, much lighter, much more responsive. And quite a beautiful aircraft. You know. Mind you, there's nothing wrong with old Hurricane either. You know. Horses for courses, I think. I think a hurricane would take a heavier beating than a spit would. It's a bigger aircraft anyway, but not a lot bigger, but a heavy, certainly a heavier aircraft. And from there then I was posted to 229 Squadron in Malta. Luca. No, we were in Halfa. Luca was the main drone we landed at, but we went to Halfa.
And what kind of machine? They had Spitfires, did they?
Spits, yeah, Spit 9s, or 5s. I'm not sure whether they're 5s or 9s.
You put 5 in your logbook to start off
with? Oh, 5s, 5s, yeah.
In January 1944. Mm. What kind of operations were they doing at first?
Again, only convoy patrols from there.
Any incidents that happened to you with this squadron?
No, not really. Apart from the fact we used to take the Mickey out of the lads there in the squadron. Again, there was I think the CO was a South African Major Boyle, I think his name was. I think it was Major Boyle. He was a South African, and there was three of us were posted. Wally Hope. No, it was Wally Hope and Dagwood, I think. I think the three of us were posted from onto 229 together. Or was it Myers? I've forgotten now, I'm afraid. But we were posted onto 229. But we were stationed, where were we billeted? Oh, in Valletta, or just... I beg your pardon, I'm trying to think of the name. Bezabuji it was called. Outside of Valletta, and on a big bay, and we were billeted in houses there. It was great. We were in private houses, and you had a Maltese came in and cleaned the place up and tidied uniforms around and things like that. And we used to tell the lads on the squadron, because most of the lads on the squadron were from the UK. They'd come up from the UK and not from the Middle East. And of course, we used to shoot a horrible line to them, you know, about more or less trying to get they didn't know how lucky they were, you know, when we used to fight off the desert flies with the size of a bee, but they weren't, but we used to kid on, they did. And we used to say our aircraft was that hot, we, you know, used to burn our arms getting in them, kind of thing. They'd have to hose them down before we got in them. We took the mickey out of them generally, you know, because they were all from the UK, these boys. Malta had been replenished from UK and not from the Middle East, from South Africa and Rhodesia and the like, but Malta from the UK. And I can always remember thinking how tiny Malta was, especially in navigation wasn't my strong suit, you know, and trying to find this little tiny dot in the Mediterranean coming back was... I used to think, I hope I don't miss it. If that small, you'd miss it. But I never did. We went from there over to Catania then. To Sicily, yeah.
Were you in any operations there?
Only patrols, convoy patrols and offensive sweeps. We do offensive sweeps, you know, from Catania. Only the diciest thing, my first night landing in the Spit was a bit dicey. I went with an American, Kai Eidema, and we flew from Catania. The front line had moved right up there, and we flew from Catania to Barry on the east coast. And they took our 45 overloads off us and stuck 45 pounders on us in place. And we went across to Albania looking for shipping then, and coming back, well, we'd done a shuttle service type of thing. And I remember my engine getting rougher and rougher type of thing. And I was always remember coming back. When we took off, coming back, Kai was more or less floating round to keep... I was right through the gate. It wasn't through the gate, but I was right full throttle, and I was just about staying airborne, but the bloody thing... I don't know, my airspeed thinking it normally would be about 260. I think I got down to about just under 200, something like that. And over the Adriatic, it was I was getting a bit concerned about it. But by the time we got back to Catania, I'd never done a night landing before, and we were late anyway because I'm slow coming back. I had to do a night landing with this engine of mine, and it was really rough, you know, more or less through the gate, trying to keep the thing up in the air. And when it landed and taxied up, about six cylinders had gone on the aircraft. You know, the engine was on its way out. It wouldn't have lasted a hell of a lot longer, you know. But that was my first night landing in a Spit. And bearing in mind, a fighter aircraft landing is a bit more difficult than a normal aircraft because you can't see in front of you all that much. You're landing on a turn all the time. You know, you're turning right down onto the deck, so as you've got sight of where you're landing right up to the last moment, you know, you're turning onto it like that. Well, having to do that type of approach at night is not very inviting. But I got away with it. Done it.
And did you have to open fire at any time?
Not until we got back to base. You know, I'd never actually opened fire. No, I'd never fired my guns in anger up to that particular time. I thought I'd come close to it, but never fired them in anger.
What was the first time that you did?
When I was on 603 Squadron over the Hague, Holland.
We'll come on to that later when...
Yeah.
But it sounds from your logbook, seems from your logbook, that you went from Italy back to England?
Yes, we went...
with the squadron?
Yeah. What happened, we were fortunate. I thought I was going to be unlucky because with fighter command, I think it was two tours of ops you'd done or 4 years, and then you were back to Blighty, you know, if you're overseas. And I think, I don't know what I'd done then, maybe 12 months, 14 months, something like that. And when I got back to, when I joined 229 Squadron at Malta, all these lads were more or less new arrivals from the UK. And I thought it would just hold my returning to Blighty back again. But when we got to Catania, after a while we got a rather hush posting through and had to leave all the aircraft behind, which was unusual. So we knew we weren't going to be in the war area at all, in the Middle East. And we untrained up to Naples. And it was that quick. It happened that quick. I never had time to buy any souvenirs or anything for my parents coming back. I couldn't even indirectly know I was likely to be returning to UK. And we embarked, I should say. We were at Naples for about a week. And then we embarked, and we all thought we were going to the Far East, you know, for the Far Eastern Theatre. Instead of that, we turned north and back to Blighty. It was so unusual. We were in KD, Carkey, RAF in Carkey, when we actually arrived and disembarked at Greenock up in Scotland.
This seems to have been about May 1944.
Thereabouts, yeah.
And you went to Hornchurch?
Hornchurch at first, yeah. And we'd done some offensive sweeps from there. Hornchurch around Paris and the like, you know. And then the great day arrived. I think we were at Detling. We moved from Hornchurch to Detling. We were at Merston at one time and then Detling. But I think we were at Detling when the big day arrived. And we all had the message from the CO, nobody to go into town, stay in the mess. And we wondered what it was all about. And then we were all called round about, I don't know, I think it was about midnight, something like that. We were all called up to briefing.